Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Thursday, May 16th. I'm Ray Graff. For all you drivers out there, your windshield wipers have been getting a workout this spring. But whether it's the wipers or the brakes, Gordon Fricke is here with his bumper-to-bumper diagnosis and repair advice. Gordon is the owner and operator of Barber & Fricke Automotive Incorporated in Hoosick Falls, New York. We welcome your calls now at 800-348-2551. If you have a question about your car or truck, 800-348-2551. And remember, it's always a popular show when Gordon is on, so better to call earlier rather than later. 800-348-2551. Or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Gordon Fricke and your car calls coming. We'll be right back. Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. The program today is all about automotive maintenance and repair. And when we do that show, we bring back the guy. His name is Gordon Fricke. He is owner and operator of Barber & Fricke in Hoosick Falls, New York. Gordon has been in the automotive repair and service industry for more than 30 years, and that's been in the script for a number of years now. So it's got to be more than that almost, right?
Oh, add a couple to it, Ray. What the heck?
All right. So let's say over 34 years.
Oh, boy.
All right. Gordon Fricke, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Ray.
Number here is 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. If you have a question, maybe your car is making a little knocking sound, or you hear a ping, whatever, 800-348-2551. Or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Well, today finally feels like driving weather.
It's really nice. Motorcycles are out. I mean, it isn't even that warm, but it's so nice compared to what we've had.
It's just nice not to see the rain.
Yeah, it's incredible.
And this is a good day to drive around, but this is the time when you should probably be taking a look at a few things on the vehicle for summer driving.
Yeah, yeah. And I'll tell you, a lot of pothole events are occurring. I just had a car dropped off yesterday. Guy hit a big pothole, broke a coil spring. The coil spring got into the tire. It rubbed into it. It didn't pop the tire, but it had to be towed in.
Yeah.
And I'm hearing more and more reports of a big pothole damage.
Yep.
And AAA said the average pothole damage, I forgot what the number was, but it was over $200. Might have been $300.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that includes the little minor ones that almost do nothing.
Exactly.
So,
yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you know, listen, cities have a tough time at this time of year, especially when there's a lot of roads in the city or a lot of streets, but the rain just plays havoc.
Yeah.
Every spring there are roads that I, when I'm coming to work, it's like driving on the moon, the sea
exactly.
of tranquility.
Yeah.
Our number here is 800-348-2551, and let's jump on the phones and get it going here. We go to Shakir in Albany. Hello.
Hello, sir.
You're on.
I have a 2002 Ford Ranger 4.0, about 100,000 miles, but the door sign, all my doors are always closed. I can never turn it off.
So it says your doors are open even though your doors are closed.
Right.
Yeah. Is that a four-door Ranger? Does that have the back doors that open up?
Yeah, it has a four-door. Yeah. A four-door.
Yeah. So what Ford has in those door latches are micro switches. And when the door is shut, it makes a connection telling the sensing system that the door is open or the door is shut. And what they tend to do is get sticky. You may get lucky here, and if you get a can of some type of penetrating oil with a spray nozzle on it, like WD-40, you can spray very liberally all of your door latches, and those are the things that close on the little pin to keep the door shut. Spray them all, and then exercise each door a bunch of times. Open and shut it 10, 15, 20 times. Do every single door on the truck. And it may take a day or two for that stuff to soak in there, but it may free up a stuck micro switch, and you may find out that solved your problem with
very little cash outlay.
Yeah, exactly. A lot of fun, really.
All right. Well, thanks for the call. And our number here is 800-348-2551. We go over to Ken in Orange County. Ken, you're on.
Yes, hi. Thank you for taking my call. I've been wanting to call, actually, for over a year. However, today I happen to be home when you're on the air, because it was over a year ago that you mentioned that there was a recall on a Toyota product. We had a Toyota car that we bought secondhand, so we didn't have like a direct relationship with the dealership, and so we didn't realize that the recall was out. You mentioned it, and we got basically a valve job for free that otherwise we would not have known about. So thank you so much for bringing that to our attention.
What a nice call.
The reason for my call.
That wasn't it?
I got a question as well. I have an elderly relative, grew up long before the days of fuel injectors, always was in the habit of giving a lot of gas to the car when they start it. And so, you know, the car just turns on with this huge vroom. And I'm often wondering if that's really doing damage, that especially on a cold day, you're not getting the oil up to the top of the cylinder, up to the valve,
yeah.
and you're hitting these higher RPMs right off the bat.
What do you think, Gordon?
Yeah, that's very interesting because I do notice that on old school car drivers.
Oh, yeah.
You had carburetors. You had to give them a few pumps in the morning, and sometimes you had to give it extra throttle to keep it from stalling. And if your hearing is getting a little deficient, seriously, you don't hear the engine revving up, so you overdo it, and it's really screaming.
Yeah.
So a good point, because if you start a cold engine that's been sitting all night, all the oil has pretty much leaked down, and you crank that thing up and give it 4,000 RPM, it's not a good moment for
right.
the engine.
Okay.
So today's engines... And I say today, we're talking post-carburetor, which is back in 1990. Maybe you saw the last carburetors out, or 89.
There are no more carburetors?
No.
I can't get a car with a carburetor.
Yes, you can, but it's got to be vintage.
Oh, give me a break.
Like what was your Le Mans?
65.
There you go. That's a carburetor.
I know.
So you basically don't do anything but turn the key and let the computer operate everything. So
there you
go. She really doesn't need to do that.
It's tough to get out of the habit,
yeah,
though, Ken.
Yeah.
Yeah, but is it doing damage, or is there anything I can do, miracle oil or any kind
of
lubricant?
Like I was saying, that the worst time of an engine's life is cold start. So it is going to be a little tougher on it. Is it going to destroy it or wear it out faster? I mean, maybe. But if that's the way she wants to start it, you may not be able to get anywhere with it, you know?
There you go. All right, Ken, thanks for the call. You know, that's interesting. He mentioned, can you put some Miracle Oil in? And back in the day, I think I told you this story, over 30 years ago, I had a Hyundai XL, one of the first ones.
Right.
And put Slick 50 in it,
yep,
when I had the oil change. I don't even know if they make Slick 50
anymore. You know, I
don't
think they do, but I still have a bottle on my shelf because we used to sell Quaker State products.
Yeah.
And that they bought Slick 50. And I still have a bottle. I'm going to keep it for like a vintage, like an old jug of oil or whatever.
Right. It'll taste better after a while.
Yeah, exactly.
Right, after 20, 30 years. The thing is, I went to an oil change place, and they forgot to put the oil in.
Completely?
Yeah.
Wow.
Slick 50 saved the car.
It helped it, didn't it?
It saved it. I was able to get to the oil change place, and it didn't seize up.
There definitely were chemicals in there that made everything slipperier.
Yeah.
So could you drive forever that way? No. But
no.
Would it give you a little break? I think, yeah.
And the car went for I ended up giving it to my mother like 15 years later.
So there you go.
Yeah. Things stuck around. Had a lawnmower engine. Arthur in Pauling. Arthur, you're on.
Yes, I have a 2009 F-150. I bought it with 28,000 miles on it. It now has 140,000. From the day I got it, it made a pre-ignition sound, a rattling, as it went up the hill. I took it back to the dealer since it was under warranty. They ran the decarbonization stuff through the engine. They gave it back to me. It still made the sound. Then I noticed in the manual that it says the truck will make the sound occasionally. It is normal. So I'm wondering, first of all, why does it make this sound? Since the engine is the ignition is computer controlled. And is there any negative consequence I should look forward to in the future?
Hmm.
Well, that the year of your truck is late enough to where there were knock sensor controls and things that were preventing pre-ignition. So what is the engine in that truck? Do you know?
4.6
Okay.
Either small
yep.
V8.
Yep, that's a nice little engine, and they didn't have the issues that the 5.4 Tritons had after that. I guess the question is, what are you hearing? Is it really pre-ignition, or is it something else?
That's right.
There were some cases where these engines made some piston noises called piston slap, and it was pretty harmless. It was just a sound that a lot of owners didn't care for, and that could very well be what your vehicle has been doing all this time, and it's really of no detriment.
What's slapping? Why does it do that?
Well, it's the rocking of the piston inside of the cylinder wall, and when you're talking rocking, you're talking like 2 or 3 thousandths or 4 thousandths of an inch. It's very minor, but it makes a little bit of a rattling sound that echoes through the engine and generally never harms them.
Over time, it won't. That little bit of rocking won't cause extra wear?
It usually doesn't, because there's been lots and lots of engines with piston slap issues that never seem to be a problem. So that's probably what it is. I wouldn't worry about it.
All right, Arthur, thanks for the call. Our number here is 800-348-2551. Gordon Fricke is our guest. It's Cars Today on Vox Pop. We'll get back to your calls in a moment. Vox Pop on WAMC. Number here is 800-348-2551. Gordon Fricke is our guest today. We talk cars and automotive maintenance and repairs. Two emails here, Gordon, and then back to the phones we'll go. This one came in from Noel in Savoy, depending on where you are.
Still snow there, probably.
Yeah, you think so?
It's high elevation.
Yeah, you might be right. Noel writes, I have a 2004 Honda Civic EX. Let me start again. Jeez, I'm an amateur. I have a 2004 Honda Civic EX automatic. For the past year or so, on and off, it's been shifting hard as well as slipping out of gear. Finally, about 3 weeks ago, it stuck into park position. Use the shift lock release to get it into neutral. Now the only way I can get the key out is to put it in neutral, then remove the negative battery terminal. I don't hear the click noise anymore when I depress the brake, but the brake lights work. I tried adjusting the cable according to the manual, which it didn't seem to need, although I did notice that I could not move the cable in or out by hand. I am stumped.
Yeah. The shift lock device is an electrically operated solenoid down at the shift lever.
Yeah.
I suspect that solenoid has failed or something to do with its operation. That's what's giving him that trouble.
Okay. This one's from Nancy in Queensbury, and Nancy writes, I'm told that the head gasket on my car is on the way out. Been that way for about a year. Can you ballpark how long before I need to do something that I really can't afford? Besides, I totally love my 2008 under 100,000-mile Subaru Legacy and don't want to let it go.
Yeah. So the issue with Subarus of that vintage was oil leaking past the head gaskets, not coolant.
Right.
That's why she's been able to keep going for a year, because it's an external drip of oil.
Just keep putting oil in.
Well, to a point, unless it gets real bad, and then it's going to really run all over the catalytic converter and the exhaust, and it's going to smoke, smell. I don't think it'll catch on fire, but you never know. So that's the thing.
I mean, could she try? I don't know if she's tried this. Any of that stuff that's supposed to seal the...
Won't work.
No?
Tried it.
Really?
I've had some people with Subaru's friend of mine had one. He says, is there anything we can try just to see if any of these additives do any good?
Yeah.
So we tried a bunch of them and none of them did any good.
Okay. Let's go back to the phones. 800-348-2551. Thomas is in Del Mar. Thomas, you're on.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. I have a 2012 VW Beetle, the first one after the new style.
Yeah,
it's got a 2.5 liter 5-cylinder, and upon startup, there's like a slight hesitation. Whether it's warm or cold, I've run Tecron through it. I changed the gas filter, spark plugs, and so I don't think there's water in the gas, and I don't know why I have that slight hesitation there. It's almost like even though it's fuel injection, it's almost as if I have to put the gas pedal down a little bit to keep it from sort of stalling, even though I don't start it with the gas pedal down,
Yeah. So the hesitation you're feeling, you're already in gear. Is this an automatic?
No. You know, the car is cold start and it's in park, and I just started with the key, no gas pedal, just started with the key, automatic fuel injection.
So when is this hesitation occurring, or this lag, before you're even in gear and moving?
Yeah, that's right. It's just when I first start up and it just begins to start and there's like a little flutter. And at that point, you know, sometimes I'll put the gas pedal down to increase the velocity a little bit, and then it'll sort of stabilize.
Does it help if you give it a little bit of air?
A little bit of gas.
Yeah.
It sort of smooths out after, you know, half a, you know, 10, 15 seconds.
Yeah. This is what you could try to do is give the throttle body, the throttle plate, a cleaning. That blade is operated by the computer, not your gas pedal's not connected to that directly. And it's possible that that's getting gummed up, and that's your sticking or lag. It's pretty easy to do. It's a good service. All cars need it sooner or later. So if you clean that up, and you can use some intake air cleaner, you can buy it at any auto parts store. Take the snorkel off and go in there and just clean that blade and the bore all up as nicely as you can. Make sure your air filter's nice and fresh. And you could also give your mass airflow sensor a cleaning with another spray called mass airflow sensor cleaner.
Is there really a difference, or do they just name it different things?
I think when they go through the factory, they just slap different labels. Yeah. No, I'm just kidding. No, there is something different
about
it.
Fine.
But I would try those two things and see how you make out.
All right, Thomas, thanks for the call. 800-348-2551. On this edition of Vox Pop, which is dedicated to automotive maintenance and repair, Gordon Fricke is in the house. We go over to Mike in Saratoga Springs. Mike.
Hey, good afternoon, gentlemen. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I got kind of a comment question for Gordon. I've had different cars all my life and usually try to, when I have a headlight go out, do it myself. And I just have a 2013 Subaru Outback.
Mm.
And boy, that was not easy. They really design it. And they make it, you got to take the splash guard thing off. I did it. But my question is, are they just doing that so people like me won't bother with it and we'll go to a mechanic?
Well,
thank you, Mike, for saving me a rant, because that's about where I go every time.
No, believe me, we curse the designers and engineers most every day for certain things, how they compact and hide things.
Well, it's
under
money for you. Well, why would you should praise them.
But some of it's really frustrating, you know, nasty work. But those Subaru headlights, at first when we looked at those, we were thinking, you know, what are they doing here? You can't change these headlights yourself. But it's ergonomics. It's design. Those headlights flow way back into the fenders, and they're trying to pack everything they can into the car. If you get into that splash shield, that fender shield, and reach up in there, you can change that light. After you've done a couple, they aren't that bad. But, you know, you're on the ground, you got the wheels cranked as sharp as they go, and you're reaching up into a dirty area.
Yeah.
But, it's ergonomics, design, and a lot of it, in some cases, is to prevent a lot of people from doing stuff themselves. Get it back to the dealer.
Well,
I did it. I'm proud of myself.
So you saved a lot of money, Mike. Good for you. Congratulations.
Yeah.
Thanks for the call.
Hi.
Now, about that whole deal where they make things so difficult. In my day, Fricky, you knew what the car, you opened the hood and you knew what the stuff did. Now, we got a new car. The salesman's like, look under here. I said, I don't know what one thing is.
When you raise the hood today, it's all plastic covers and panels. And you know, years ago when you raised the hood, particularly on a vintage car, muscle car, you looked and said, wow. There's the carburetor.
Right.
There are the valve covers.
Right.
There are the exhaust manifolds. There's the alternator. You don't see any of that stuff anymore.
Exactly. I looked like a pretend car when I looked under the hood.
Yeah, it looks like a model.
Exactly. All right, let's go. You're exactly right. Yeah. One of those old
plastic glued together models.
Yeah, man. Yeah. Let's go to Beth in Brooklyn. Beth, you're on.
Hi. I have a question about my 2002 Honda Civic. I have a lot of repairs that I need to have done, and I'm saving up to do them. There are two major repairs, and I need to know which to tackle first.
All right.
All right.
So So the first one is, they're telling me, and I've already taken it to a mechanic, they're telling me that my exhaust system is full of little holes and is kind of breaking down, and that they want to repair or replace the whole thing. They're doing like a cat and back, catalytic converter and back replacement. And then the other thing that they said needs attention is my suspension is shot, and they want to do a replacement on my front and rear strut.
Okay.
So which of those should I go for first, like just for safety and usability of the car?
Right. So the suspension, if your struts and shocks leak too much of their fluid, you're going to have a stability handling control problem. So if you go through bumps and it's banging like crazy, or the car is not stable and maybe even jittery on the road, I would say probably tend to that first, because the exhaust, other than getting noisy and generally leaks beyond the catalytic converter, aren't very harmful as far as, you know, idling and sitting
there.
Will
you pass inspection?
Well, believe it or not, the inspection does not involve the condition of the exhaust system.
Really?
As long as the emission control components are in place.
Huh.
So you can come into the shop roaring loud and pass inspection.
Huh.
You might get a ticket from the police, but as far as inspection goes, you're okay.
Right.
So if the handling and stability is becoming an issue, I think maybe that should happen first and then do the exhaust.
Okay, that sounds great. And then I have an inspection coming up next month, so... that's good to know, too. Thank you.
Okay.
Thanks a lot. Now, I mean, the catalytic converter, that's an expensive
proposition. Yeah, I'm thinking they were telling her from the converter back, not including the converter, I'm guessing, because they do last a long time.
But if you have a 2002 car, probably with well over 150 thou on there, is it worth it to do a catalytic converter? I mean, that's worth more than the car,
well,
almost.
Well, it can crank the bill up for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, let's go now to line 7 at 800-348-2551. Kelly in Newburgh. Hello.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
I have a 2015 Mini Cooper S convertible that has run flat tires. They're 17-inch run flat tires, and I've been going through tires like nobody's business because of potholes and little... what look like small bumps in the road and are not. So I was thinking about going over to regular tires and just getting like a flat repair kit in the car kind of thing.
Yeah.
But I wanted to know if that would help or if I need to get different size wheels in addition to the regular tires.
Yeah, that's a good question, because run flat tires started appearing. Mini Cooper was one of the early ones because... the early cars, I believe, had a little teeny spare. In fact, I know they did. The first generation Mini Coopers had little spares hanging down in the back. But then they, for space constraints and the S models, there was no room.
Mm-hmm.
But to answer your question, you can put a non-run flat tire on that existing wheel. And then you need to be prepared if you have a flat what to do. And some car manufacturers... don't even come with run flats. A lot of the Hyundais have no spare, no jack, no wrench.
Yeah.
And I don't know if there's a fix-a-flat kit in the car, you know, to pump into the tire.
Yeah.
But yes, you certainly can do that. And then you have a much greater choice of tires and potentially some that will last a lot longer for you.
So, but do you think that it will make a difference as far as potholes and that kind of thing?
Because
I've gone through about 3 tires in 2 years because they bulge. And like this last one, it wasn't even like a deep pothole. It was more of a ridge. And my guard's always up. Yeah. I missed this time.
Yeah. And the answer to that question is probably not, because that's a low profile performance tire on that S. And you have to put the same size on the car. My only recommendation would be, when you shop for tires, seek out ones that have an XL rating, which is extra load. It makes this tire a bit sturdier. So definitely get XL rated tires when you look.
Kelly, thanks for the call. That brings up a point. The cans of that fix-a-flat stuff, do they work?
They do.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah,
for how long can you ride it?
If it's a puncture, a little nail goes in it, they will completely seal that puncture up. And, you know, they say it's for temporary use till you get the tire looked at or fixed. But if it's a small hole, it could potentially solve it for quite a long time.
And then you can put air in again at a normally?
Yeah.
That's amazing. Yep. All right. Our number here, 800-348-2551. Gordon Fricke, the guest on the show today. Edith in the Berkshires. Edith, you're on.
Hi there, everybody.
Hi.
I have a 2015 Volkswagen Jetta, and it doesn't like the cold. When I back out of the driveway on cold, damp days, the brakes groan or something is groaning. I turn to go down the street, and before I reach the corner, it's fine. I had a Honda that did the same thing. The brakes were fine. I had them checked and rechecked and checked. So I'm assuming it's the same idiosyncrasy.
Yeah. So the noise you're concerned with is when you first apply the brakes after leaving your garage or driveway, you feel this grinding, kind of grating, rough sound that then slowly gets better as you use the brakes that day?
Very, very quick.
Yeah.
I don't think I'm even using the brakes. I think I'm just backing up.
Yeah.
And I don't feel anything. I just hear it.
Yep. What that is there's a very, very fine film of corrosion or rust that develops on the brake surfaces.
Even overnight?
Yes. And,
wow.
Some cars, you just hear it more than others. And if you don't drive the car daily, it's worse. But let's say you drive in from a rainstorm or bad winter, sloppy, slushy mess, and then the car doesn't get driven for, let's say, the whole weekend. There's more time for that corrosion to develop, and it gives you more noise. So do you drive the car daily?
No.
Yeah, that's part of it.
Times a week, but they're not the long trips that are better for a car.
Right, yeah.
So what can I do?
Drive it every day if possible.
Okay.
If you can.
A
lot of cars suffer from intermittent use with rusty brakes. We change. I'm telling people this all the time. We seem to change more brake pads and rotors because of severely rusted rotors than we do worn out pads. They come in for, let's say, a state inspection, and we raise the car up on the lift, and the rotors look like boat anchors.
Huh.
They're just gone.
Yeah.
And that's what it is.
All right, Edith, thanks for the call. Our number on this program is 800-348-2551. Gordon Fricke is our guest, and who has been? Ryan in Malta. Ryan, you're on. Hello, Ryan. Oh, boy. He's been waiting like 22 minutes.
Oh, boy. I think he gave up.
He's probably nodding off.
Yeah.
Give him one more second here. Ryan, are you there? Oh, boy. I apologize, Ryan. We do try to move as quickly as we can, but, you know, it's a call-in show in the seven states. Carol in Greenwich. Carol, you're on.
Hi there, guys. Hi, Mr. Fricke.
Hello.
My name is Carol, and I have a question regarding the gentleman who called earlier on about his older relative who guns the engine when she starts it.
Yep.
Would buying her a car starter help? Because then she wouldn't have control of the accelerator.
Well, that's a very good question, because then the auto starter would simply turn the car on with no throttle, and it would start and run and warm up and be ready to go. That would be an option.
And she might think that that was such a thoughtful gift.
Yes. Yep. Good idea.
Well, you know, Carol, maybe you can come on and do the show for Gordon in the future. I know you're around.
No way.
All right. Well, thanks for the call. Our number is 800-348-2551. And now we go to Gregory in Albany. Gregory in Albany, you're on.
Hey. Hi, guys. How you doing?
Good.
Excellent. I have a 2003 Volvo XC90. We were driving it for about three or four years in the past. It has very low miles, about 60,000 miles. The alternator went, and so we parked the car for a considerable amount of time. To replace the alternator, apparently it's like a full day's work, so it's like a $900 exchange, either at the dealership or elsewhere. So we parked the car for a while. It's been sitting for about 6 years, and so now I'm at the point of putting the car back on the road, and I just wanted to know some maintenance tips on what I need to replace, because the car has been sitting for 6 years.
Wow.
Cleaning out the gas tank, that kind of thing. What can I do? And it's been partially like 3 years indoors and 3 years outdoors. So it's been in and out as far as weather-wise.
Right. Well, you're going to have some corrosion concerns, mainly with the brakes. From being off the road that long, I'm sure all the brake rotors or discs are severely rusty. Gasoline is going to be pretty old. Whether it needs to be drained, refilled with some additives in it.
Can you just put some of that enzyme stuff in?
You can try it. Yes, you can. Yeah, I do that a lot. You can get that enzyme treatment. Startron is one brand. K100 is another one.
The stuff I see is blue.
Yeah, it's like a translucent bottle. Yeah, that's really good, so I use that.
Yeah.
Okay. You know, your battery's going to be obviously, you know, finished off.
Yeah.
You may want to, at that point, it's been sitting a long time, maybe get it to a shop and say, hey, can you give me an idea of what I'm up against to get this car roadworthy? Because in addition to that big alternator bill, you're going to have a lot of other stuff that it needs that you didn't think it needed. So I would get it checked out.
Go ahead, Gregory.
Okay.
All right. Well, thanks for the call. We have to take a break. You know, Zach the engineer gets that look on his face. Sometimes the callers get a little noise on the line. It's not the caller's fault. But Zach the engineer, he gets that look, and I swear to you, the steam comes out of his ears.
He's on a timetable.
It's very entertaining over here in Studio A. It's 800-348-2551. Gordon Fricke is here. Automotive maintenance and repair, and more on the way. Box Pop on WAMC, Ray Graff with you at 800-348-2551. Gordon Fricke is our guest. Always the lines, man, they get loaded up when Gordon is here. You know why? Car advice ain't cheap. And on this show, it's free. So, you know,
there you go.
Pretty popular. Two emails and then back to the phones for the home stretch. This one is from Daniel. Daniel writes, I replaced the left rear caliper on a 2007 Camry. Should I bleed the whole brake line system, the two rear, or just the one side that the caliper was replaced on?
Well, he can really just do the one he worked on.
Yeah.
Although it's advisable on older cars to change the brake fluid and get some new fluid in there.
Yeah.
But it may be too much for him, and he may be running into rusty bleeders. So yeah, to get it going, bleed the one he fixed.
Okie dokie. And this one is from Bill in Massachusetts. Bill writes, I've got a 1986 Chrysler Town & Country. I started it one time, and during ignition, my hand slipped, causing the engine to not turn over. The next time I tried to turn over the engine, it struggled horrifically ever since and needed to give it some gas in order to help it start. Once started, it had a rough idle, and the RPMs move up and down ever so slightly. Any idea?
I think it's just a coincidence, because just slipping off the key for a second and then restarting it, I don't think is really going to create any problems on its own.
Well, it's a 1986 Chrysler Town & Country.
1986.
Yeah, you better put that thing in the Smithsonian.
Get it to a car show.
Oh, really? You're going to take it to the car show? Well, good luck with that one. Thanks for the email. The number here is 800-348-2551. We go over to Terry in Great Barrington. Terry.
Yes, hi, guys. I recently purchased a 2014 Honda Pilot, and what I'm noticing is when the eco mode is engaged, the VCM is engaged, I notice a vibration. It's more pronounced at different speeds. I did look into it a bit, and it appears that Honda's aware of the problem, and they have a service bulletin on how to repair it. I guess it's a dampening issue. But my question is this merely something that's going to be, you know, something that will annoy me, or over time, is this going to cause, you know, long-term issues with motor mounts or anything like that from the vibration? It's got 80,000 miles on it.
Yeah, I mean, how noticeable is it? Is it quite apparent?
It's more apparent, at like 45 miles an hour, but I notice it at somewhere around 25 miles an hour if it's engaged, 45 and then 65. But probably most pronounced at that 45 mile an hour speed. If I'm, if I've got my foot off the gas and I'm kind of coasting a bit, I notice it at that point, you know.
Well, and if you take the eco off, all of those symptoms are gone.
Yes, it's only I can tell you without looking at the dashboard when it engages.
Okay. Well, what the eco mode does is it just creates a new computer program to save fuel. So it shifts up a little faster, gets you in a higher gear, locks up the torque converter sooner to basically make the engine run slower and use less gas whenever possible. I don't know what the shuttering is, if it's because it's engaging things too soon and lugging the engine, which it could be.
So in other words, it's in too high of a gear
maybe,
and it's not going fast enough?
It may be giving you that sensation. I think what I would do, if Honda's aware of an annoyance or a problem, maybe just reach out to Honda directly. I'm sure they've got a good customer line. And just ask them that very question. If it's not too bothersome, is it okay to keep running it in eco mode, or do they recommend keeping it out till they realize or find a fix for it, you know? That's what I would do.
Okay.
All right. Thanks a lot, Terry. Appreciate the call. And now it's time for Arthur in Dover Plain. You're our second Arthur today. Go ahead.
I just want to follow up on my valve flapping thing.
Oh, so this is a second time, Arthur? That's a no-no. So we'll give you 20 seconds here. Go ahead.
If I put thicker oil or an additive in that engine, can I solve the flapping problem?
Is this the F-150?
This is the valve flap, yeah.
Yeah. No, it generally thicker oil won't really do too much because that slap is occurring at normal operating temperature, and I don't think the thicker oil will be enough to cushion it.
Okay.
But try it.
All right. And, just a note, if you are a caller on this program, once per show, and we try to get through as many calls as we can. If you need to follow up and you're off the air, apologies, but there'll always be another one. So now we go to John in Clifton Park. John.
Hello there. I hope I can ask a quick question.
Go ahead.
And then a longer one.
All right.
2016 Subaru Outback. You start up in the morning and it sounds tinny in the engine, something like something's rattling. It kind of reminds me of the cover on the converter in the back, but it's not there. It's up in the engine.
Yeah.
Any ideas what that might be?
Yeah, Subaru has had years and years and years of exhaust shield rattling and vibrations. And the newer generation cars like yours, when you start them, they rev what seems to be higher than most engines when you do a cold start. So they're really running pretty fast. And you're hearing a lot of exhaust noise and a lot of shielding from the catalytic converters because they're up front with the engine.
Well, if I can clarify, it sounds like that, but it's coming from the engine.
If it
sounds like something in the engine is just kind of rattling.
Tinny
sounds.
You may be hearing some valve lifter noise and some piston noise until the engine expands and fully warms up.
Could that be an octane issue?
I don't think so. Not on a cold start.
Okay.
So that's acceptable then?
I think it is. And I've had a lot of people comment that why is my Subaru revving so high for so long after a cold start? And it's primarily an emissions issue to clean up and warm up faster. You could ask that question to Subaru and see what they tell you. There may be something going on where they're remedying that, but I hear that a lot.
Plan on it. A quick yes or no, does that same vehicle have issues with taking the key out and, you know, the key stuck in the column? It's just started happening where you got to move the wheel and it still won't come out.
I
kind of play with the gear. And
I haven't encountered that, but there is a steering lock and a park lock mechanism that has to happen before you get the key out. Could be either of those two. Make sure your shift lever is pushed fully into park. The early Subarus had a lot of trouble with that. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you very much.
You got it.
All right. Thanks a lot for the call. Number here is 800-348-2551. Gordon Fricke is our guest. We go over to Mike in Springfield. Mike.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Good.
I'm calling because I got a 2013 WRX Subaru, and I just had the clutch done because the clutch had finally got it at like 110,000. He did the guy that did the work for me did the clutch and the flywheel, and now I noticed right after I got the car back that when I go on like a hill in reverse and it's a steep enough incline, there's like a crunching noise, and like it's like the transmission's almost slipping or something weird when going in reverse. And also in forward, if I get to a high enough like RPM in a certain gear, like, you know, second gear, getting up to like 3,000 or 4,000, I'll hear like a little bit of like a weird noise as it comes down.
What does this sound like? Is it a rattling tinny sound, like something's loose?
Well, in the reverse, it's definitely a clear crunching sound, like not a good sound, like crunching bad when I'm going on a hill. I can go in reverse on a flat surface fine if I don't push it too hard and it doesn't do anything at all.
Yep.
But on a steep incline, it'll just like, it feels almost like it's slipping, not really going in reverse, and like it's like a jumping like crunching sound.
But
like,
your foot is completely off the clutch at this point, correct? You're not halfway down or halfway up with the pedal.
It is right when, like, so when you're in, when you are like engaging the clutch is when it starts. It starts immediately as soon as the clutch grabs.
How long have you had the car back with the new clutch? Days, weeks, months?
Well, I've had it for a while, but it's been doing that since I first got it. Yeah. I haven't been driving, so just that's why.
Clutches are like brakes. They do need some break-in period. They do need to wear in. But if it's been that long or immediately thereafter, you might want to just go back and just ask the shop if they could go out with you and you'd take them for a ride and just say, hey, this, you know, is this a concern? You know, what is it? Just to see if there's something else going on in there. Or, I mean, you always stand the chance of a problem with one of the parts, unfortunately.
Right.
So that's what I think I would do that before too much.
Sounds like something's broken. Yeah.
Yeah. Do that before too much time passes.
All right, Mike. Thanks for the call. It's Vox Pop on WAMC. Gordon Fricke is our guest. This guy's name has popped up on the computer screen about 27 times. Brian keeps getting disconnected. Hello, Brian. You're on.
Hey, good afternoon, guys. Thanks for finally getting me through. Hey, I got a 2001 Yukon, super high mileage, just short of 300,000. She's been a workhorse over the years. A couple of days ago, had a transmission line leak, had those replaced as well as the cooler, but I do not have a 2-3 shift anymore. Wondering if... you think the transmission's cooked, or should I try the solenoid and filters first?
When the line started leaking, did it get run low for a period of time? I mean, obviously you don't know you're leaking right away, so did it get low? Yep. And you started having slipping and shifting issues before you realized that?
It did start slipping a little bit. I immediately got fluid as soon as I saw the slipping, you know, kept it full or what I thought was full, continued throughout the day. Whenever it slipped, added a little more fluid. After the lines and cooler were replaced, mechanic told me it was actually overfilled. So we drained a little bit out and still no 2-3 shift.
Yeah. Hmm. Is that the original transmission at this age and mileage?
I believe so.
Yeah. Some transmissions do not react very positively to being run low, even for a little bit. With that mileage and that age of vehicle, it could very well be an internal problem that is not going to be solved with solenoids and filter and fluid changes.
How would you find out for sure?
I would go to a transmission guy, transmission shop. Yeah. Yeah,
but you're thinking a lot of the gription went out with the fluid.
It's
you're thinking
very possible because that's tough on the transmission when it runs that low on fluid, and it's suffering before you notice it. You know, before you start feeling it, that transmission's already low on fluid and things aren't grabbing and the pressures aren't adequate for a bit, and it can reach an early demise before you can even catch it.
Wow, so, it's not an early demise.
No, I shouldn't. Yeah, I mean,
it's 2001.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, hey, Brian,
with 300,000 on it.
Yeah,
I'm trying to be gentle. You're always telling me to you know, don't give people horrendous news.
Well, I mean, that's a 300,000 miles, man. You know. Anyway, thanks a lot, Brian. We appreciate the call, and let's see if we can get a couple of more in here. We go over to, is it Copaic in Florida, New York, or is it Florida in Copaic?
It's Barbara in Florida, New York.
Oh, hello. It says Copaic up here.
Hi.
I'll just call you Copaic. You're on.
Okay, I have a 1996 Mazda Miata. It has 44,000 miles. I became a little old lady that only goes to the grocery store.
Yeah.
And the only problem I have with it is that when I turn the lights off, one of them keeps flipping like it's winking at somebody. And I've taken it to a couple of places, not the dealer, and they've said they don't know what to do. And I was just afraid it would be really expensive. Can you tell me what's going on?
So the light is not shutting off?
Yeah. When I put it on, it sometimes winks too for a little bit. But when I shut it off, it takes a really long time to go off because it keeps winking.
This is the headlight.
Yeah, the headlights are the ones that go down so that you can't see them
yes.
anymore.
So one of them is not hiding as quickly as the other. Is that what you're saying?
Exactly.
Yeah. So those are motorized. It's possible that the mechanisms that operate those need to be cleaned and lubed, and that could be pretty easy and straightforward. That would be the absolute first thing to do because, you know, that age of the car, there's – do you drive the car year-round, or did you?
I drive it about 1,000 miles a year,
wow.
mostly when it's nice.
Yeah. I would take it to your shop if you have a place where you normally go, and they can lube up every moving point on those lights and exercise them a bunch of times. It's just like a stiff door. You know, let's say the passenger door never gets used. That's the one that's the hardest to open and shut because it just doesn't get used very often. So try that.
All right. Well, thanks a lot, Barbara. We appreciate the call. Now we go to Jason in Lenox. Jason.
Yeah. Thanks for taking my call. Quickly, I've got a midlife crisis car on mind. It's a 1971 Land Rover, 53,000 miles, in pretty good shape.
Nice.
New frame and springs. Tires are nice. They're asking $8,500. I'm just wondering if that sounds like a good deal to you.
Tell me the year again.
It's 1971.
So what is this? A series?
A Land Rover.
What is it, like
Land
a series,
series
2?
Yes.
So it's the old school Land Rover with the skinny grill.
You take it on safari.
Yeah, the old safari vehicles.
Yeah, that's what I'm going to do. That's the second part of my life.
Yeah.
Boy,
I'll tell you, it's hard to judge a vehicle over the radio waves. You know, it depends on its condition, if it's rusty overall.
No, it's not rusty. It's got a new frame and springs. It's not terribly rusty. It's in pretty good condition overall. It's got a canvas top and a hard top that comes with it. And it's just been something I've been kind of wanting for a long time.
Yeah.
And it's like, there it is. So I don't know if that's, I mean, they started off asking 15,000 and I talked him down to 8,500 and I'm still not sure if it's a good deal.
Yeah. Have you driven it and run it and gone through it?
It runs fine. It's got just a little bit of rust, you know, it's aluminum.
Right. You know, I don't follow the trends on that version or that series vehicle. So, I mean, that could be an okay price, but there's so much to check.
Yeah.
You really should get it looked at if you can.
Okay. You know, it's hard to quantify the value of the midlife crisis, too, right?
Well, exactly.
Well, Gordon Fricke, we are done, sir. Support comes from Myron Wine and Spirits, Kingston, since 1960, a wine and spirit shop with thousands of imported and domestic wines and spirits and staff. For questions and advice, Myron Wine at Spirits on Facebook. The Albany Pine Bush Discovery Center presenting Lupin Fest with craft and food vendors, music, live wildlife programs, and guided tours this Saturday from 10 to 4, albanypinebush.org. And Flatbrook and Company, a design and build firm serving the WAMC listening area, working to help transform homes and cultivate living spaces. Kitchen and aging in place specialists, flatbrookandco.com. Thanks again to Gordon Fricke for being here today. Thank you for listening. Great calls, as always, and some great emails as well. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Thanks to Dina Salzman for answering the calls. Jim Lavoulis is our producer. Tomorrow on Food Friday, we explore vegan cooking and vegan Italian. Rocco DeFazio is here and Capital Region Vegan Network. Right now, stand by for the Capital Connection.